Welcome to WKX on the Morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, and NHTalkRadio.com. I'm AJ Kierstead. Let's get the latest New Hampshire government news with our friends at the New Hampshire Bulletin. Get their articles at NewHampshireBulletin.com. They join WKX on the Morning every Friday in the 6 a.m. hour. I'm joined this week by reporter Ethan DeWitt. Welcome back.
Glad to be here.
All right, so let's kick off with there was a resignation in the Joint Fiscal Committee in New Hampshire State House. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this was sort of one of the bigger news items of the week. Representative Ken Wyler, who is a longtime representative in the House, he's been there about 30 years, and he was the chairman of the House Finance Committee and the Joint Legislative Fiscal Committee. He resigned this week over, there were a few events that kind of preceded that. One of the most notable ones was the revelation that he had shared a document with fellow committee members that questioned the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines and included a number of outlandish claims, including that they were responsible for millions of deaths and that they included little tentacled creatures that were infiltrating the people who took them. So it's been a very rocky week for this, but he did step down. There is a replacement, Representative Karen Umberger. And I should stress that this is one of the most powerful positions in the state. And so the stakes here were very high.
Yeah, I mean, what's the role of this committee?
Yeah, so it's actually two committees by statute. The person who is the chairman of the House Finance Committee is also the chairperson of the Joint Legislative Fiscal Committee. House Finance Committee is really important around the budget season. So earlier this year, Representative Wyler was sort of at the helm of the 2-year budget that was passed. And the Joint Legislative Fiscal Committee is it's a joint committee between the Senate and the House. And they deal a lot with contracts that are coming into the state and also with major expenditures from New Hampshire agencies. So this would be, for instance, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Safety. Anytime they wanna spend a large amount of money on a program, they have to get approval from this committee. This is why it's one of the most powerful committees in the state. And at stake in the last few weeks has been one of many things that has come before this committee has been two contracts that total about $27 million. And those are federal contracts, federal money, a federal program that would boost vaccination efforts in the state. And this is sort of where the tensions that ultimately led to Representative Wyler's resignation, this is where they originated, this item on vaccinations.
Yeah, if this was just some random rep that's just in the house with many others, it wouldn't be a big deal. But because he's on this essential committee where the numbers don't lie, the fact that COVID exists and that the vaccines have been extremely effective in their role, as much as some other groups may put concepts out there that aren't really backed by any known science to speak of. It's important that these departments get these millions of dollars that the state doesn't have otherwise to get people vaccinated that may not have access to it in a convenient basis. They could be at-risk individuals. They could be unable to travel due to financial reasons or disability reasons.
Right. And this item had drawn some controversy from Representative Wyler. He was raising a lot of questions last month in an exchange with the Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner, Lori Chibonet. He at one point in that exchange claimed that the vast majority of people in hospitals who have COVID cases are vaccinated.
Which is backwards.
Right. The commissioner corrected him and said, no, it's 90% of the people in the emergency rooms and in hospitals right now are unvaccinated with COVID. But that was a standoff that was a little bit telling kind of where his mindset was. And it started the seeds of what would become a problem for him as he continued to express vaccine skepticism. That $27 million contract is usually approved. Federal contracts, again, there's usually no controversy with them. They don't involve, obviously, state money. And so there's no revenue implications for the state. And so generally, they're accepted. In this case, the fiscal committee has held up that $27 million. And that was another thing that kind of preceded this. But what really was the surprising turn for a lot of people watching this was that on Monday, the House Democrats The House Democratic Caucus released a document that Representative Wyler had shared to other fiscal committee members and finance committee members that included all of those outlandish claims and falsehoods and conspiracy theories around vaccinations. And as soon as that came out on Monday, the scrutiny and the spotlight on Wyler took a different turn. You had Governor Chris Sununu, a fellow Republican, calling for him to resign. Sununu saying that he had talked to House leadership, pressing him to resign. House leadership, in their own interviews, bristling at the governor's involvement, but ultimately 2 days later, Wyler resigning. So it's been a very tumultuous week for, again, a very important position in the House.
Has Wyler kept his mouth shut, or is he speaking out?
Well, so Wyler, in his resignation letter, which he sent to the House Speaker, again, that was Wednesday. In that letter, he expressed regret for sharing the document. He said that he had not read it completely, that he didn't endorse all of its claims. But then he continued on in the letter and said that he hoped that the committee would still look at this contract skeptically and potentially even hold it up or vote it down, and that he still wanted more information from the Department of Health and Human Services. It's also notable that last week, Wyler, while he was still chairman of the fiscal committee, canceled the meeting entirely, which is a pretty unusual move. And the reason he gave was that he didn't feel that the Department of Health and Human Services had yet given enough info on this item. So they had tabled it the last month, and then last week they canceled a meeting over it. And he is still not backing down from that position, even though he has obviously lost his position as the chairman.
Yeah, that's $27 million. I'm really surprised how much pushback it's getting, because there's no hooks really from the federal government when it comes to this. It's strictly, hey, just use it for vaccine distribution and communication. And meanwhile, we're getting people breaking into executive committee meetings, throwing a fit about it, and breaking up GOP announcements at their press conferences that they're having, saying for them to not accept it. I mean, you don't have to take the vaccine, but there's still going to be a push from a public health perspective to get people vaccinated, because just the numbers show that the people that are dying due to COVID, it's something in the high, it's in the mid 90% are unvaccinated individuals or hospitalized. I'd love to really dive in sometime with some public health experts with regards to the communications efforts around COVID, because I feel like there's a total... They totally missed it. It went from the get-go even to now. They're not pushing the right numbers.
Yeah, and I should note that even with Wyler's resignation, so Wyler's resignation came after, just a torrent of criticism in the last few days about this document he shared. But just the fact that he's resigned does not necessarily mean that these contracts are suddenly going to be approved. There's still a lot of vaccine skepticism and skepticism of these contracts specifically in House Republican leadership right now. And that is important as we see Representative Karen Unberger take this role. We just still don't know how the votes are going to fall when this item comes up. On an earlier interview this week, Representative Stephen Smith, the House Deputy Speaker, was talking, he described these contracts, which are again to help promote the vaccine but not mandate it, right, as poorly worded and horribly thought out, that binds the state to ridiculous mandates. And so there's still a very strong skepticism. And so it's going to be interesting to see. Governor Sununu wants these contracts, but as we saw at the Executive Council meeting and also on these House committees, there's a different narrative that's taken hold on some on the right that is making it a political battle.
In my own personal opinion on this, it seems like the people that are against the vaccine are kind of killing all the PR and goodwill they're possibly going to have for when if Biden gets his way with OSHA pushing vaccines and testing on a regular basis. That's the thing that I would assume they would be freaking out about, and this is just... It's just surprising, the pushback when it comes to this. And it's such, when you talk about how much money's been dumped to fight against COVID, this is just a drop in the bucket. New Hampshire isn't getting what New York's getting.
Yeah, and looking at Wyler's year, I mean, this isn't the first time he's had this position under House Speaker Bill O'Brien back in 2011. He was at the helm during that budget. That was a famously very conservative budget that made deep cuts to the state. And this year, he steered the budget more or less according to what Governor Sununu and other House Republicans and Senate Republicans wanted. They got a budget that they could pretty much all agree on, and so fast forwarding from that was back in May and June when that budget was crafted to today, it's a very different landscape. And it's a wedge that has been driven into the New Hampshire Republican Party that has been there growing and percolating, but really came to a head this month. And you're seeing it now in the executive council meeting, and you're also seeing it here with this resignation. So I have no idea where this is going to go politically. Where ultimately the sentiment is going to arrive, how it's going to affect next year's elections. I would never try to speculate on that, but I do think it's interesting how it's a much different picture than it was back in the spring when Republicans were more or less united on at least budgetary items.
Yeah, because when you look at how the election cycles always go, the midterm is always rough for the incumbent. There's no way around it. And right now, the Republicans are so divided, it's going to be so hard for them to get a real coalition to go against the Democrats when next year comes around, when Sununu is going to he's going to likely run for Senate. There's no way around it at this point. He hasn't announced anything, but he's touring the country, speaking to different people, which always seems to correlate. The GOP needs to get it together if they want to have any chance next year.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, it's just hard. There's so many constituencies that are bubbling up. There was a rally on over the last weekend at the State House. That was the New Hampshire March for Medical Freedom, and that was a lot of people who strongly disliked Sununu's leadership, are conservative, and were very forthright in saying that they didn't, they didn't, support him, even though he's also Republican. So that's something that he's obviously going to have to contend with as he moves ahead, how to kind of stitch this together and whether this is temporary or something that's longer term, that's going to be a problem next year.
All right, so looks like there's some new laws when it comes to regulating small career schools. Can we dive into that a bit?
Sure. This was a law that actually had some bipartisan support this year. Basically, it takes effect on Saturday and so New Hampshire has a number of small career schools. These are vocational schools that can teach you, you can get new training and how to cut hair or how to be an electrician. The applications vary. And so what this new law would do is it was just remove the regulations from those schools that are small. So any school that takes in less than $100,000 in tuition a year would no longer be re regulated anymore. Right now, they're all regulated. They have to go through some hoops. There's a lot of complaints, particularly from yoga instructors during the pandemic, saying that the regulations were kind of tying their hands. And so this was something that passed with bipartisan support and is going to affect on Saturday.
It just starts waving his yellow and black libertarian flag over here for a second, but it seems, I mean, what was the purpose of them trying to have any say in small educational institutions like that, like a yoga studio that maybe has 20 clients or something?
Yeah, well, I was looking through the regulations on this, and there are a lot of them. They sort of the way that the regulations had worked was almost as if these were full schools, like you might see with a K-12 school. These are categorized as private post-secondary schools, but obviously they're vocational schools. But those schools did have to go through a lot of hoops. They had to kind of lay out their calendars. They had to kind of give a lot of financial information. There had to be certain qualifications for the heads of those schools. They also had to pay a yearly licensing fee. And so I think the idea was Because these are vocational schools, you're teaching professionals, we have to hold you to a higher standard. The law has always exempted avocational, which are essentially hobbies. So if you were, for instance, taking skydiving classes because you need a certain number in order to skydive individually, then that would be the type of thing that wouldn't be regulated. But if you were training to be a skydiving instructor, and you could make money off of it, then it would be regulated. So that was the distinction that was drawn. And I think there was just a growing sense that this is too much, it's too costly, and it's preventing some businesses from getting off the ground who might train people who then might start their own businesses.
Yeah, both parties definitely want to enable as many businesses as possible to be able to enter the market, especially with the reopening going on. More people are more comfortable heading out. In theory, knock on wood, the numbers are starting to go in the correct direction for COVID. So people are going to be stuck. This is like the perfect timing, because during the winter is when people start considering, okay, what can I do on my cold, wet, snowy Saturday that's going to get me out and actually move around and learn something. So it's what was the rationale for having them restrict such small amounts of income or such small schools like that?
Well, I actually don't, I'm not sure where they arrived at the threshold of $100,000, according to the Department of Education, there are 41 you could call them schools or centers or institutions that are affected by this new law. And so they're essentially all 41 of those now no longer need to do this licensing. And just to go through a list of who they included, they're training centers for massage therapy, dog grooming, hypnotism, midwifery, bartending, photography, taxidermy, yoga teachers, cybersecurity. So it's just a very wide range. And these are, again, smaller schools. If you make more than $100,000, I think the idea is that you should be regulated more. So I don't know where they got that threshold, but it has freed up a fair number of businesses.
Yeah, and you really should have a threshold of some sort, especially if it's a for-profit institution. I mean, the deregulation entirely that we saw earlier on in the 2000s, especially, that led to the likes of like a Trump University and such, that ended up being a total, it was fraud. I mean, they got sued to no end and had to pay out big time. So it's, as much as I like to say, hey, why the heck is the government involved with something like this? To a certain extent, it is a consumer protection that they do step in at a certain point, and especially with some of these, I could imagine if they got to a certain extent, could especially be a little abusive towards potential clients with the little less what you would consider career oriented things.
Right. Yeah. And I it's going to be interesting to see what, without these, what new businesses we might see, what new training.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But there are consumer protection laws, I should note, that do take effect if students were being defrauded. You don't need this particular statute. That was an argument that was made by supporters of this. There are still statutory mechanisms. So we'll see what happens.
So go open your hypnotism school. Go get that side hustle.
Right.
All right, we've got about 2 minutes left. Anything quick here you want to cover to close it out?
Well, I think that we're just all focusing on these school meetings. School board meetings have really been the focal point of so much of what we've seen nationally and locally in terms of people's frustrations and passions and emotions when it comes to this virus, and particularly the new phase that we're in where we have vaccines, but there are still mask policies. So my colleague Anne-Marie and I are watching a lot of these. We've paid attention to them throughout the week. I encourage you to go onto New Hampshire Bulletin and kind of read some of our coverage of it, because it is something that is only really escalating. It's now moving into an area that might involve the courts. There's new tactics being taken by some parents who are anti-mask mandate. And there's new tactics being taken by the Department of Justice, the US Department of Justice. So all of this is sort of swirling around, and it's just, usually you only see this kind of engagement with your local town issues around town meeting time. And here we are, it's October, and we're months away from that. So I think that's a developing story that everybody in the state is kind of tuning into.
Yeah, and it's on a weekly basis. Every week you're hearing some story of one side or the other freaking out at a school board meeting or in the schools themselves. So this isn't going anywhere for sure. And I actually spoke to Anne Marie about this 2 weeks ago also. And I had a conversation with the president of the New Hampshire NEA regarding some of this too. If you check out nhtalkradio.com, that's your best bet, because one was on the WKXL feed and one was on the New England Take feed. But They're really interesting conversations that are definitely going to be hitting the courts more and more as we head into the new year. So definitely follow up with NewHampshireBulletin.com on that. Ethan, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks so much, AJ. Glad to be here.
You're listening to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, and NHTalkRadio.com. Definitely check out our website in order to get the podcast feed, and check out NewHampshireBulletin.com. We'll be right back.